Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. Home values are now falling on a national basis. Prices are only down about 1%, but certain markets are seeing more significant drops. For example, prices in Austin, Texas are down 10% from last year. In Denver, Colorado, they're down 5%. Tampa, Florida, and Houston both saw prices fall 4% year over year. More interestingly, home prices have dropped by 1.4% nationally in the past 3 months. So they're down about 1% year over year. But in the last 3 months, they're down 1.4%. So the decline in home prices nationally is accelerating. This has not been the case since 2006. And this is going to become a large issue for banks. And a lot of people say, well, it's, you know, home prices are not dropping everywhere. Well, as I said, they are dropping now nationally on the margin, but they're dropping pretty significantly in Texas and Florida. And that's a problem because that's where everybody moved to after the COVID outbreak. That's where all the mortgages were written. So yeah, it's a significant issue. So moving on, and it's going to become more so. So moving on to more economic data, the Empire State Manufacturing Index for December was reported on Monday. The headline general business index, this is manufacturing, fell 23 points to minus 3.9. Now, I mean, I find that unusual because all the talk about the factories and onshoring and all the stuff that we hear talking about, it's just not reflected in the data yet at all. In fact, the opposite is happening. The government shutdown delayed the non-farm payroll report for November, and that came out yesterday. The November unemployment rate jumped 0.2 to 4.6%, up from 4.4%. In September was the last time we had a household survey. So that's the last time we had an unemployment rate. 4.4% in September, 4.6% for November. Now, the net jobs did increase by 64,000, which seems okay. It's not terrific. But that was after jobs fell. 105,000 jobs were subtracted from the labor force in October. And here's the most important takeaway that I have. Not only is the unemployment rate ticking up, most importantly, there was a huge increase from September to November of over 900,000 people who were employed, counted as employed, but they were reported to be working part-time for economic reasons. So they got fired from a full-time job, and they got hired as a part-time employee. It's not very good for the news for the labor market whatsoever. Meanwhile, retail sales in October was unchanged month over month in nominal terms, meaning including inflation. That includes inflation. Hence, in real terms, the number was once again negative. As Bloomberg and the Kobayashi letter point out, gold prices and global debt are moving in tandem. Interest expense on global debt is now $4.9 trillion annually. Interest costs are up $1.6 trillion over the past 3 years. And that's because global debt has soared by $55 trillion. Global debt isn't 55. It has soared by $55 trillion over the same period to reach a whopping record of $346 trillion. So at the same time, over the same period, gold is up 140% and has tracked global interest expense in near perfect correlation. My interpretation of this phenomenon is clear. As global debt and interest rate expenses soar, so does the necessity, the absolute necessity of global central banks to monetize the debt away. In plain words, global central banks are printing new money to buy government debt and permanently hold that sovereign debt in order to remove it out of the realm of free market pricing. Debt has reached such onerous levels that the process now must be done endlessly. There's no ending to it unless you want to default on the debt explicitly. In other words, no longer default on it through inflation, which is what they're doing, just cancel the debt and wiping out the bondholders. That's coming down the road. Turning to Mr. Powell, he cut the Fed funds rate, as we know, by 25 basis points at the December meeting, despite inflation being above its 2% target for almost 5 years now. What I find interesting here is that the administration called Powell a stiff for doing so. Now, I call Powell many things. I don't have kind words for Mr. Powell, but Trump called him a stiff because he wanted to double the cut at the very least. So he wanted 50, maybe 75 basis points. And that's just the beginning. Mr. Trump wants the lowest interest rate on the planet. That's what he said. He wants a 1% Fed funds rate. He thinks that's what's most appropriate. So the main point here is that the Fed independence, if it ever was the case, maybe it was for a year in 1913, that independence is over. Intractable debt and governmental pressure has forced the Fed into a regime of permanent interest rate repression. In other words, they have to be involved printing money, shoving it into banks, buying sovereign debt, giving banks credit, otherwise the whole system collapses. As we close out 2025 and enter 2026, the portfolio currently sits in sector three, which is a stasis in the second derivative of inflation and growth. Very plain and simple. We are now 17% net long equities with the hedges of precious metals, particularly in and out of silver, but holders of gold and platinum, which is doing just as good as silver, pretty much. And we hold short-term treasuries as a ballast. Next year, turning to the calendar here, let's just talk about next year. The odds of a correction should increase significantly over what we experienced this year. Now, 2025, with the exception of the Liberation Day tariff fiasco, was a decent year for so far. I mean, the stocks have down pretty sharply in the last 4 days, and that's when my model told me to get more defensive on November 6th. That's my clients know. I started selling stocks on the margin. I took their portfolio down from 40% to about 17% net long. I started that process on November 6th. But the major averages are having a decent year outside that Liberation Day tariff fiasco. Now, remember, we had a near neutral portfolio heading into that April 2nd chaos. And that's why we were unscathed. And then we went 40% net long when the tariff threats were largely recanted on April 9th. And that's how we stayed for most of the year up until November 6th. That's why we're having a decent year here at Penta Port. Again, participating in the upside with hedges and ready to protect and profit from the downside. So the dangers in 2026 are going to come from three scenarios, and I'm going to rank them in order of ascending odds. So number one, the least likely, is that the $40 billion in QE and the Fed's one or two more rate cuts between now and June 17th of 26 will not be enough to supply the bond market with the necessary liquidity and stocks correct sharply. And like I said, this has a relatively low odds of occurring because even if it occurs, it's going to be very short and truncated. Maybe the market falls down 20% and the Fed's going to come to the rescue. So it's really not really much of a concern. Number two is that the AI trade falters, causing earnings per share and GDP growth to falter in tandem. Don't forget, much of the stock market appreciation and virtually all of the GDP growth has been in the AI trade. And the odds of this happening are higher than scenario one, as the AI trade is now being financed by hundreds of billions of dollars in corporate debt issuance. If the return on interest doesn't manifest quickly, there's going to be a sharp pullback in CapEx, and that's going to burst the bubble in stocks. And there is a bubble in stocks. A quick word on valuations. Not only is the total market cap of equities to GDP at a record high, and the price of sales at a record high, and the risk premium at a record low, but the Shiller PE ratio is at a record as well. This ratio is now over 40, and that has happened only twice in history. The first time was just prior to the dot-com bubble burst. The second is now. And the third And also a very high probability of occurring, probably equal to the AI debacle, is long-term yields could spike inexorably due to our persistent problem with inflation and our problem with insolvency that's exacerbated by a trenchant drop in the Fed funds rate when the new Fed head takes charge. And that's going to be around the summertime. Now, this is not a guarantee to occur. I'm going to monitor these three dynamics very closely. The model is going to pick them up very quickly, and we will react very quickly before the major carnage is done. Stay tuned. 2026 promises to be a very interesting year, and it could and should be the year where the great reconciliation of asset prices begins.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.